This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast here on Stockbox, where today our guest Scott Kainz, the CEO of Corsel PLC, is joining us again for a good catch-up on some recent developments from the company. So welcome back, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Thank you much. Great to be here.
Good. And of course, Kenny joining us as well. All good, Kenny, from your end?
Yep. All good from a miserable Scotland, but hey, that's what we're used to. So,
indeed.
Yeah, still on, mate. Indeed. Good to have you back, Scott. And
It's been a while. We've been pretty busy.
Yeah. It's a bit strange, isn't it? You know, it can be quite quiet in the markets. And then, like yesterday, you popped up with two RNSs within a couple of minutes each other. So
that's always the way, right? I mean, you sort of want to space these things out so people can digest a bit. And of course, once you have inside information ready to go, you have to put it out, right? So that's the way this worked out. But in a sense, I think it's elegant because it kind of starts to show the revised way forward and the speed that we want to move, you know, in that period and, you know, what we've been up to in a somewhat quiet period over the last couple of weeks and months.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like quite not a crossroads for the company, but it looks like certainly a turning point for the company going forward. You know, there's quite a lot covered in the strategic update. So, I mean, we can probably start with your existing portfolio. So obviously you've got the upstream battery metals. Can you maybe just give us a quick snapshot of where we're at with the two main projects in PNG?
Yeah, so we still have the Wawa Gap interest and the Mabari interest, and we're just completing the restructuring of those interests into an Asian vehicle called IBM, Integrated Battery Metals, that is going to list at some point either in Singapore or on the ASX. And so if you remember that deal from last autumn, it brings in some new cornerstone investors, which, you know, really some big Asian industrial concerns, and it ties our assets to them and adds lithium. So we end up with 50% of the new combined entity. We get a fairly large over $1 million carried interest, a 1.5% gross royalty, revenue royalty on Wawa Gap. And in our view, you know, a very viable go-forward entity there in Asia that is going to list at some point, as I said, and we think is going to drive more value than these assets were driving here in London. I mean, I think after a couple of years of pursuing what we thought was a fairly conservative, you know, industrial-led strategy with those, you know, the market to some extent seemed, somewhat passive about it. So, you know, I think we had to grab the bull by the horns here, restructure these. And as I said, tie them to the kind of end users of these metals, which is really what that's all about. So that remains in place. I mean, that's something that we announced some of this work late last year. And it's almost finished. So there's a lot of documentation when you think about having to take these interests from here and their interests from there and put them all together. Obviously lawyers and lots of back and forth with drafts and complicated docs to get all that done, but that's almost done. We will confirm to the markets once that's completed and signed. But that's, you know, we've announced this previously. That's well on its way at this stage.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I suppose it was key as well as, I mean, you know, once everyone's signed it, you know, you guys won't be the operators anymore and you'll have this sort of fully carried interest, which frees up, you know, manpower and resources for you to develop into other projects.
Exactly right. I mean, we have a carried interest. We can kind of be as involved as we want. I mean, we'll still be part of the joint venture management committee that runs that entity. So we'll be sitting there with a vote and the ability to influence things for a while. But you're correct. I mean, it will not be something we necessarily need to spend day to day. Some of our partners are located in Sydney on this, a little closer to PNG. And again, the whole point here is to tie it to these sort of Asian industrial groups. So as they get more involved, then, you know, then we can potentially be less involved. So a little bit of handover there, I think, as that transition goes forward. Some of our existing team kind of transitions into this new IBM company. So that works out quite well. But you're right. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a gap there. And I think, you know, the market may have perceived that. To some extent, we've been, quote unquote, in transition for the last couple of weeks and months, right? And, you know, I think the market perceived us as being a bit empty as we're sort of, that's in progress, but not finished. And the kind of go forward has not been kind of maybe made clear. And I think Monday's announcement was really that effort. It was to sort of say, here's what we've been up to and here's what we're doing. And this is how it all fits together in a little more detail.
Yeah. And of course, the nickel price doesn't really show any signs of slowing down. It just seems to be marching on regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you talk to the groups that I've hinted at, you know, there's a big Korean cathode company involved. There's the Chinese cathode company involved. I mean, they remain desperate for these metals, which are just going to play a larger role in all the devices and EVs and things that we use on a daily basis. So the theory has always been good. I mean, that's what Corcel has been doing for the last couple of years, you know, doubling our nickel assets by picking up WoWo Gap for very little. Yeah, sometimes the strategy pays off short term, sometimes it pays off longer term, but I think the thesis remains solid. And so this is really just a restructuring while offering continued exposure to that same basic strategy. I mean, this is nothing different. If anything, it improves the situation probably because, again, we've got lithium and you've got, like I said, some of these tie-ups, which we think are quite important.
Yeah, and obviously sticking with the EV theme and not so much EV batteries, but more EV motors. You've obviously announced as well, but Mount Weld, the rare earths project in Australia.
Indeed, that's probably one of our first go forwards, and that was announced late last year as well. So Monday we put out some ground magnetics work. They did some inversion work on that, preparing for the initial drill campaign. We're going to drill 8 holes there, or our partner is actually. 2,000 meters or so reverse circulation. I mean, this remains as exciting as it did when we first looked at it last year. We got some really interesting comments in from the guys doing the mag work. I mean, they're saying these are some of the quote unquote hottest mag targets they've seen, which, you know, doesn't mean anything in a sense, right? Until you drill, you don't know. But I think it kind of is as much as you could ask for, right? I mean, it certainly lines things up nicely. This is a mere 1.4 kilometers outside of Lynas's rare earth oxide mine there at Laverton. This is one of the biggest REE mines in the world. And so again, the idea has always been drill it out. Let's see what the results look like. If they're as good as they look like they could be, you've got some obviously, some deals to be done here with the major producer next door, who's not going to want that asset to be anywhere but in their portfolio. So could be quite exciting in a sense, very quickly moving forward, which is really what that RNS was about. We're currently doing the permitting to get obviously access to the site to go get the drills in there. And we're hoping that all gets done here over the coming weeks. So we'll update the markets when the drilling starts and as those results come in. But I think this is sort of some of the first go forward in kind of the revised strategy. I mean, if there was one issue with WoWo Gap and Mombari, they were mature projects. You know, I mean, we've been kind of stuck in permitting with them for a while. And I think certainly the retail end of the market probably finds that not the most exciting thing in the world, right? Because you're kind of waiting for permits that you can't control directly. I mean, you're waiting for government bureaucracies to process things. This is a little bit of back to the basics, mineral exploration, you know, find some hot targets, go drill them out and announce results. And potentially that drives the needle and moves the company forward in a meaningful way fairly quickly in this case. Buying a Corcel share today still gets you exposure to WoWo Gap, gets you exposure to Mombari, gets you exposure to lithium now through that restructuring, and gets you exposure to rare earths through the Mount Weld project.
And do you are there plans to explore on these projects you mentioned there, Scott, about actually getting out and doing some exploration? But have you actually got some concrete plans? Are they costed? Any plans in the near term future to be getting on the ground and actually doing some drilling?
Well, Mount Weld, yes, that's what I was saying. So the mag work we've announced on Monday is the prep work. It's the final prep work for the drilling. So we're just getting permitting for the drilling to begin. Mm-hmm. And remember, that's all being handled by our partners, Rivers Gold. So this is sort of an elegant deal where we picked it up. We then did a back-to-back deal to farm it out, and we don't have to pay anything. So this is all free to Corcel for the time being. Okay. They get to earn in by paying for that work and performing it. And so, you know, again, we think it's an elegant little situation where Corcel can get access to drill results, you know, without having to pay for it. So yes, is the answer. Mount Weld is going into drilling immediately as soon as the permitting goes through. So, you know, that could move this way or that way, depending on timing of those permits. But we're talking weeks. We're not talking sort of, you know, months and months here.
Okay.
And I know as well, just to sort of finish off the kind of battery metals theme, that you have not ruled out, you know, picking up further acquisitions. You know, if something comes across your desk and it's got a low entry cost and, you know, it's a decent opportunity, you won't be scared to.
No, exactly right. I think you would expect us to continue to look for things like Mount Weld. I think that's a good example, like I said, with the back-to-back nature of it. I mean, maybe everything we do is not going to be of that nature, but that's sort of the goal. The goal would be to end up with a portfolio of these kind of non-op positions where you get exposure to the underlying upside without having to pay much. I mean, you know, little or no cost. And we'll talk about how we're refocusing a bit, you know, from a geographic point of view. But I think we found, you know, projects like Mount Weld to be kind of a template that we're trying to reproduce. And so, yes, without being able to say too much more on that, I can certainly say things are being worked. I think that's clear from the RNS, and that you can expect us to continue to grow the mining portfolio. So this is not a move away from battery metals. I mean, a lot of people invested in us because of the battery metal story, and that will remain in place as one of our cornerstones, and will be expanded, as you say.
I'm sure listeners, Scott, will be interested to understand how this process works. I mean, how do you identify such a project or an opportunity in the future? Do they come to you? Do you go out and...
Yeah, seek it out. It's a bit of both. It's a bit of networking, you know, and that's changed a little bit with COVID. I mean, you know, you used to go to some of these conferences and things and be able to meet people there. Yeah, it's a bit of both. I've got people reaching out. You got people reaching out, honestly, with a lot of nonsense sometimes. So you got to sort of comb through it. But you got people coming to us with things that, if you sort of skim through it, every so often you find something interesting. Other times, we go to them. You know, we sort of say, listen, you know, part of our network, we'd like to add lithium, for example. The restructuring deal we did with the Asian groups in Asia, that came through some of my London Business School connections, you know. So some of this dates back to some of the educational network and things like that, which is great to see. The main guy there went to LBS with me, and you know, we used to work for Sentient Group, which is a huge PE fund in the mining space. And, you know, we just started talking, and yeah, it took some time. If you remember, those RNS dated back sort of 18 months or so. So it's not something that happens immediately all the time. But you cultivate these connections, and when you have something that you find common ground on, then you can put these things in place relatively quickly.
No, you go. I've been speaking too much anyway.
I was just going to ask about, just sticking on the theme of the battery metals here, the FGS, the Flexible Grid Solutions, is that now completely sidelined, Scott? Is that not a focus of the company at all?
Yeah, that's probably worth stepping back for a second, looking at the big picture. So again, we've brought the cornerstone and changes the roster a bit. The corporate debt, you know, that we've been sort of dealing with for a chunk of last year is basically either paid off or completely restructured. So I think that's an important point. I mean, we spent a lot of time dealing with that last year, and you might remember there's numerous announcements kind of cleaning that up. So that's now pushed out to next year, to 2024. A big chunk of it has been paid off, and you know, the relatively small balance has been restructured. So we're quite happy with that. And yeah, the third part is what you just said. FGS has basically been closed down. I mean, you know, I'm happy to admit, you know, not happy, but I mean, honestly admitting that it was a bit disappointing with how that played out. I think we thought there were some pretty exciting options, and frankly, that the UK needed many of these things. But, you know, we've covered in prior podcasts some of the difficulties in getting funding for fossil fuels, for example, and some of the barriers to moving these projects forward with regards to grid connections and such blockages and congestion across the UK grid. So we did, if you might recall, we sold Tring Road, the gas peaker, for $320,000 or so, plus some cost reimbursement. We sold our Burwell grid connection there for the battery site for, you know, $250,000 or so. And yeah, I mean, you know, we sort of, the takeaway there is that ultimately, you know, I think you need to, well, I say you think it might be better to develop these things in a private company, frankly, that can land bank them, that can sit on things for years. You know, as an AIM company, I think you guys both know we're under pressure to deliver in weeks. I mean, we literally judged on sort of week to week basis, right? In the share price every day. You know, as we sort of worked on this over the years, you know, Burwell is a great site. If you could sit on it for a couple of years, you know, it may actually be super valuable. But I think we had to take a view that FGS wasn't going to develop to the timeline that we needed. You know, I mean, we took a sort of 6-month shot at funding those gas peakers. And ultimately, you know, people said we love the projects, but we're not going to fund fossil fuels. Funny enough, if you were to go try to fund them this summer or, you know, this year, you might have better luck, right? You know, you see what I'm saying? But AIM companies kind of can't sit here and sort of wait. You know, we need to get going. And I think that's really what these changes are about. So yes, FGA just is now effectively closed down. We exited the projects for cash in most instances. And, you know, we actually made a little bit of money. I mean, it's certainly not the upside we all wanted, and I'm sure the market wanted. But I think, you know, we did our best with it, and I think it washes its face for the large part. So really then the question is, where do we go from there? And so you've got the battery metals, we've talked about that, and then you want to add X, right? And what is X? I think X needs to be cash generative and needs to upscale this business. I mean, those are the two primary requirements. And FGS, to some extent, was designed to be the cash generative aspect, right? The idea was, you know, if you weren't running into grid blockages, or if funding was easier for getting, you know, gas peakers and gas sites like that, that would have done it for us. So what do we do to replace that with? And really, that's what that RNS on Monday is about. I mean, James Parsons, our exec chair, I mean, he's a huge part of this business. I mean, a lot of people, I think I see comments online about, you know, they kind of act like this is some huge bureaucratic business with James sort of not involved, or, you know, just acting like a chairman. I mean, he's an exec chair, so he's involved in everything we do. I mean, everything we've done and everything we're going to do forward, especially all the strategy and major decisions like this. And his background, as you might remember, you know, is having his ex Shell. He took Sound Energy, obviously, up to about a billion pounds a couple of years ago. He lived and worked in Brazil, speaks Portuguese, and has a lot of connections and experience in the area. So when we sat down over the last couple of months and said, you know, how can we take this forward and develop that using, you know, what we bring to the table, it was kind of a no-brainer to sort of segue at least partially back into oil and gas development and production. And that's really what Monday's RNS outlines.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of change, but now a strategy. But obviously, now you explained, you know, that James has got experience, you know, in Brazil and fluent Portuguese, etc. You know, it kind of makes sense to, you know, if you've got skill sets within your company and you're not utilizing them, it's sometimes a waste. So, yeah, I mean, Brazil's a big country. I mean, it's kind of open for business now. I mean, I've seen quite a lot of, especially battery metal projects, especially the TSX, that are starting to sort of fly now because they're in Brazil, and I think they've got that open for mining attitude in Brazil. So I'm assuming that applies to oil and gas as well.
It does, and I would just be clear, when we say focus on Brazil, that does apply to both the battery metal side and the oil and gas side. So I mean, those connections, you know, Brazil is like a world to itself, as you say. It's huge and very natural resource friendly. And again, as you say, it makes sense to use these connections. So yes, when we say Brazil, we mean both the mining side and the oil and gas side. And James is, in fact, headed out there in a week or so to push forward some meetings that we've already had. I mean, we've been working on this for some time. Again, Monday was the announcement to sort of just make clear to the markets what we're actually doing in the background. But we've got a bunch of vendor meetings set up shortly, you know, to look at oil and gas and mining opportunities out there. So, you know, the chance of this moving forward in the near term is quite high. But yeah, I agree. I mean, James, obviously very comfortable. It's great to have somebody who can hop on calls and speak Portuguese. You know, it just cuts through some of that. You know, you'd still be a bit careful on working with a partner that had no English capabilities, right? Because that can just be challenging from a sort of tie into the UK point of view. But I think it gives us a capability and, you know, ability to execute on things that not everybody else has. Given his comfort, you know, he was trained by Shell, I believe, to speak Portuguese, and, you know, 4 or 5 years out there, it's pretty, you know, serious. So yeah, that was kind of the view we came up with, that the opportunities are there. We wanted to use these connections, and this was something we could push forward in a timeline that would complement the battery metal stuff that we've spoken about earlier.
And the main goal here is to get cash generative. So it's almost, would you say it's a replacement for the FGS? Because that idea was there to get cash generating, and whilst you've got the exploration sort of blue sky potential. So it's the same idea here to get early cash flow.
Yeah, I think so, especially on the oil and gas side. If you think about it, like, you know, doctors and dentists can get working interests in oil wells, right? Like, it's easier for smaller entities to get access to cash flow in oil and gas than it is in mining, right? I mean, mining tends to be a bit binary. You got small explorers exploring, then you find something, then you either develop it and become huge or you sell it off, right? You don't usually take small minority interest in production, right? I mean, it's just not something that happens in mining because the nature of the sort of production is different. But whereas, you know, in the US, for example, like I said, there are funds of doctors and dentists going out and buying parts of oil wells in Texas and Louisiana, right? I mean, it's easier to get in there. And so if you think about it from our point of view, it's something that's going to be more viable for us to do, to add cash flow that may or may not require an RTO, right? And that's something you got to think through. It's like, maybe you do an RTO for the right deal, but it might be possible to do some of these things without having to sort of suspend and go through a process and spend a bit of money on lawyers and all that kind of stuff. So I think this gives us that option to add cash flow, as you say, in lieu of the prior FGS view of things, and perhaps relatively quickly. So I think that is just the nature of oil and gas. I also think the risk dynamic is a little different. You know, I think if we get into a little later stage stuff in the oil and gas aspect, then it will not be as speculative, but probably not as blue sky either as some of the mining stuff is, right? I mean, we all say the mining things, you know, the odds of any one exploration property going to a mine are not that high, but when you find one that works, you know, it's huge, right? Whereas again, if you get into a little later stage oil and gas production, the risk profile is very different. So we're trying to balance the risk aspect of all this, right? I mean, we want to make sure that we're exposed to different geographies, but also exposed to different risk profile. So we're not taking a bunch of, say, 2% bets. We're taking some, you know, lower or higher risk, higher upside, and maybe a little bit of lower risk, more cash generative type stuff. And that's kind of the portfolio that we'd like to end up with.
So you said relatively quickly, and I guess at this stage, you can't provide a whole lot more detail. The chairman, obviously, James Parsons, has connections in the country, opening up opportunities there. But there's nothing more you can share at this point, more concrete. When would you hope to be able to sort of announce something a bit more, yeah, tangible, Scott?
Well, we flagged James' trip next week to kind of indicate that it's quickish, right? I mean, never say never until deals are signed. And obviously, those will be announced as appropriate. But the fact that we're going out there, I would say, shows that we're past stage one, right? I mean, stage one is usually the sort of video call. Let's get to know each other. What are we talking about? What are we looking at on the mining side? You know, it's a couple different commodities out there. What are we looking at on the oil and gas side? We've got some connections with some oil and gas services companies out there that do work on existing production fields, right? And they may, you know, they may be able to put us in touch with some existing production, for example, right? So you can see how you sort of run down these multiple roads. But again, I think we're talking more in the scope of weeks here, not months, would certainly be our ideal. As I said kind of earlier, we perceive, rightly or wrongly, the market kind of sees us in transition. I mean, I think it's maybe partly the market conditions as well, but I'd say the deal we did on the PNG assets is an excellent one. I mean, like, I just do not think there's a more ideal way to take them forward. But I can kind of understand how you can say, well, you're kind of non-op on those now. You know, what are you guys going to do? And I think that's what we're fleshing out here. You know, and that's where Mount Weld, that's where other battery metal projects come in. That's where new Brazilian projects come in on the mining side. And that's where Brazilian projects come in on the oil and gas side.
Yep. And obviously, it's exclusively onshore. Only for
onshore, yeah. I mean, nobody's pretending to be Exxon or something, right? A Shell or whatever. So, I mean, no, we're trying to stay within our remit here. It's going to be onshore stuff, but that's, I think, where a lot of the opportunity is out there at the moment. Yeah. And it certainly would be more appropriate for a company of our size. But I think you can see scenarios here where Mount Weld exploration goes forward, maybe some new things on the mining side and the oil and gas side, and then again, we as a company, you know, grow into that hopefully pretty quickly. And you know, you can certainly hope to see ourselves up at the 15, 20, 25 million pound market cap pretty quickly, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing that can happen, you know, relatively straightforward, right? I mean, with just some of these things falling into place. So yeah, I mean, that's the basic strategy. I think one other thing I would mention, and this is covered in the RNS, is it's kind of more of a back pocket point, but we are always, and this is sort of an ongoing thing, looking at transformational options, right? And we sort of hint at it there at the end. You know, it's not our main focus at the moment. We're not looking to do, as I said, a big RTO that kind of changes the focus of the company. But there is always potential. You know, we get offered things from time to time. And if we find something that we say, you know, this is going to make our stakeholders a lot of money, then that's something we might look at as well, right? So that's kind of just percolating back there. You know, lower percent chance of it probably happening or, you know, anything specific moving forward. But we did flag it, and I think it's probably worth flagging in this discussion that, you know, there's always those wild card options, right? Sometimes you get something that you know, on your desk that is just amazing, right? And it's just something where everybody's is set to make a killing, and we're going to go do that. I mean, we're not ever going to be so beholden to our day-to-day vision that we wouldn't look at those things. So it's just a back pocket point. It doesn't sort of take away from anything we've discussed here. I think it's, like I said, something that, that's floating there somewhere. And we just sort of want to make the point that it's the revised strategy that those things are, that, you know, always kind of coming through our network, and you never know. But I think at the moment, the plan is as we outlined it. We're going to do an IR event later in March, which is going to be a bit of a rebranding, obviously, and relaunch of this revised strategy. And by that time, as we've discussed, I would expect to have potentially heard some of the results of the upcoming travels and how that might be kind of more concretely manifested.
So this IR event, Scott, that sounds like a very key kind of pivot point. When is that? Yeah, that's in March. Where's that going to be? Is it going to be in person, online? What's the deal with that?
The idea is to try to do something in person. Yeah. I mean, We haven't sort of fleshed it all out yet. It's about six weeks away or something like that, 4 to 6 weeks away. It'll be end of the March, most likely. Anybody that's done some rebranding, and I'm not talking about like, we're not going to change the name of the company, I don't think, or anything like that. But we do need to, you know, again, Corcel was sort of branded to take what were the existing PNG assets and tie them together. With this sort of UK energy strategy we've talked about. And so clearly, as we segue some of that into an oil and gas, maybe more cash generative production type focus, we are going to need to sort of obviously have a PowerPoint that sort of outlines this in more detail and reflects some of that new positioning, right? So that's really what that's going to be. Anybody that's been through that process knows it's not a quick one. You know, I mean, getting various bits moving on websites and PowerPoints and things does take some time. Anytime you get into the sort of design narrative thing aspect of that, that can, you know, that's usually measured in weeks, not days, right? So we're just flagging it that it's coming and that we're working on that in the background. I think Monday's RNS outlines the plan, the details of which, as we've sort of said here, will be fleshed out in further, further detail over the coming weeks.
Okay.
Excellent. Just stepping back slightly, Scott, sorry, Mark. I mean, obviously you've restructured the corporate debt. Can you just outline the situation at the moment, you know, with the...
Yeah, so we had a couple of chunks of debt last year. Some of that was short-term stuff that had been put in by an investor earlier in the year. That chunk of debt was paid off in full by early this year, sort of end of last year, earlier this year. It had been restructured in October and then paid off in full. So most excellent there. Then we had some historic debt. This is quite old debt, actually, that dates to the prior version of this company and some old coal assets and things like that. So it's quite old. And that debt was also paid down, or is in the process of being paid down at the moment, actually. And the balance of it restructured. So it's now sub 500,000 or so out to 2024. So the point here is to sort of take the debt off the table so that it really does not factor into any of the things that we all discussed here today, right? I mean, it's just irrelevant from the point of view of dealing with this. And again, as we look to upscale the company, that amount of debt hopefully becomes a very comfortable level that can be paid off as part of, you know, what we would all hope would be a larger funding or an exit at some point. That would make those numbers start to look pretty small. I mean, I think we all know that running kind of subscale public companies of any style is difficult. You know, we've tried to cut costs. We run this company with 2.5 people, basically. So it's not including the NEDs, of course, but I mean, it's small. I mean, you've got a certain basic cost there that, of auditors and all that stuff. And I think nobody would argue with the fact that the company needs to upscale itself. And that's certainly the goal. And I think what you can see with Monday's RNS is our taking the bull by the horns to get that done. I mean, I certainly hope the investors see the logic in it, why we're doing it, and how that could lead to us being a 30, 35 million pound company relatively quickly, at which point the corporate debt and some of these other things fall pretty nicely into place, I would argue.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, I think the market cap from memory, and tell me if I'm wrong, Scott, I think it's approximately 2 million quid at the moment.
Yeah, two and a half, depending on the day. We've actually got some pretty good reaction to Monday's RNSs. So, we're up a bit. But yeah, there's always a lot of volatility. I mean, you guys may have a view on the markets as a whole. I don't think we're sort of out of the woods. You know, there's been a bit of a rally in some of the U.S. tech stocks and things, but it's not super clear to me that we're getting into, you know, what's really going to be an extended risk on situation. But again, I would argue the battery metals theme not going anywhere. And I think the sort of elegance of some oil and gas, either late stage exploration or production slots in quite nicely. And it should be a sort of very interesting extractive story for us.
Yeah, I mean, there's different valuations go about for a name listing. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, you know, a name listing was worth a couple of million quid. So it's a crazy situation to be in. And indeed, there is companies that are sub £1 million as well. So there is a lot of opportunities out there in the market. And as you say, it doesn't take much tailwind to get a bit of momentum. And once that money starts, hot money starts going around, it starts looking for opportunities. And it could be something where I feel with Corsair, you know, you might put out an RNS and scratch your head and say, well, why did we not get a reaction? And then maybe 3 or 4 days later, you know, some bizarre that kicks it on. It's really a weird time that we're in at the moment. It doesn't
seem agreed. Agreed. No, that's kind of my point. I mean, I would have argued that if you really dig into the sort of restructuring we did last year, you know, like I said, tying up with some, you know, massive Korean pub codes and some other things, you know, that would have had more of an effect. I mean, you would think if you were just to sort of, just war game that a bit. But as you say, the currents of the market, you know, are they kind of fickle and they sort of to some extent do what they're going to do. So I think, you know, what we can do is promote the story, obviously, present a clear strategy. I think we can't be accused of not executing on what we are or working to execute on what we say. I mean, we don't always hit home runs, but I think we have hewn to our strategies in the past. And I think you'll see us hewing to what we've outlined here on Monday. I mean, we don't sort of flow with the winds. I mean, this is designed to be an industrial led strategy with blue sky attached to it. It's not designed to be a sort of, you know, one day you're doing blockchain technology and tomorrow, you know, you're doing farming or something, right? I mean, like we're trying to stick to our guns here. And I think that the tie-in with James, as I said earlier, and his experience in Brazil and in oil and gas is super logical. So we think this is quite sensible. And hopefully, as you say, the markets will start to pick that up. And it only takes a day or two of good trading and you can find yourself in a materially different position.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you very much, Scott, for bringing us up to speed on everything there. Let's see how things go with the development of those oil and gas assets. You say you want to move fairly quickly and James is going out in a week or so's time. So we can keep an eye out for what happens then, see some materialization of that idea and that early cash flow generative aspect there that you want to get going. And of course, watch out for that IR event as well. I think that'll be quite a key thing to keep an eye out for. Possibly you might even try and get to it myself if it works with timing, etc. And see what the new direction of the company. But you're right in what you say. I think that you have to make a call, and it's a shame that FGS didn't work out because it was a great idea. But if it's not going to work out, then we have to move on, don't you, and try something else.
I think, you know, a management team needs to be honest and direct and aggressive on these things, right? I mean, it's like a general manager of a sports team, right? You have to be able to say, you know, is my team good enough to get through the playoffs and win the championship, mm-hmm. or is it time to go, you know, react decisively? And we'll take all the criticisms we need to take on what's worked or what hasn't worked, but I think we'd like to show anyway that when things need changing, we, you know, James and I get out there and get those things done. And that's what we're doing here.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Scott. That's great. It's good to get an update from you there. So let's keep an eye out for some of those developments. But Kenny, unless you have any final questions for Scott, I think that's brought us all up to speed nicely.
No, not all good. It's just good to catch up. And it was interesting to hear what the Brazilian angle was all about. But now it makes perfect sense with James on board. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see what develops in the next few weeks.
Great. Well, I look forward to speaking with you both, hopefully with further updates to come.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Scott. Cheers.
Thank you much.
Bye. Cheers, thanks.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fair Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.